Keep it locked to VOA 1, The Hits.
Hello, I'm Esther Gidu. You watch Welcome to Africa 54. Here's what's coming up.
Ghanaians head to the polls on Saturday to elect a new president in a stiff competition between current Vice President Mahamudu Bawumia and former President John Mahama. We'll have a live report from Accra and analysis. President-elect Donald Trump's cabinet picks will soon face questions from U.S. senators about their beliefs and qualifications. No words can express. And in our entertainment report, South African music producer, guitarist and composer Mongezi Ntaka joins Heather Maxwell to discuss jazz music. All this and much more coming up on today's Africa 54.
In less than 24 hours, Ghanaians will head to the polls to elect a new president. Former President John Mahama is one of the main challengers against ruling party candidate Mahamudu Bawumia in Ghana's national elections on December 7th. Mahama vows to bolster job creation and the economy, which is recovering from a $30 billion external debt default in 2022. Bawumia says despite woes associated with post-COVID pandemic and internal pressures, he is also committed to strengthening the economy. VOA's Nairobi Bureau Chief, Mariama Diallo, has this report.
On the streets of the Ghanaian capital, Accra, billboards of the various candidates vying for the December presidential election are everywhere. And the excitement from voters is palpable. Since 1992, the country has been governed by two political parties, the National Democratic Congress or the New Patriotic Party. And that is not likely to change, analysts tell VOA.
Is the dominant parties, one of them is going to carry the day. From 1992 up to 2020, the minor parties, if you put all their performance on together on the average, they have not gone up to 5%. But it is also true, if they are able to hit more than 4% of their strength, they are able to push the election to a second round.
Some voters say they are tired of the two parties and have not decided yet for whom they'll cast their ballot.
Since 1992 to this year, we haven't changed any party different. Every day, MPP, NDC, we won't change.
Ghana is the second largest cocoa producer in the world, according to the United Nations Development Program. But the country defaulted on most of its $30 billion external debt in 2022 after the effects of years of borrowing were made worse by the global impact of the COVID-19 pandemic.
Economy will play an important role because it's a bread and butter issue. Anytime, we've seen time and again that anytime you have a very difficult economy, campaigns become difficult for the government of the day.
A view echoed by John Tadden, assistant professor at Pepperdine University in California.
In Ghana, inflation at some point was at a historic 54% over the last 18 months. But domestically, they have faced a lot of sustained protests over illegal mining crises that have taken place in the south, where people without mining licenses have engaged in consistent destruction of the environment without any government oversight or restriction.
These issues have pushed some voters to say they will not vote for the current government. Instead, they want NDC's John Mahama, a former president who has made a comeback and promises a 24-hour economy to boost business development and job creation.
Currently, we are using one-shift system. So if the 24-hour economy comes, it's going to be three shifts. Well, maybe example, let's say 100 staffs are working in an organization. So if the 24-hour economies come, it is going to be 300 staffs.
Today you go to buy this, the price is different. Tomorrow, the next day, different price. So we want a change in the system.
Others say they will stick with the ruling NPP candidate and current Vice President Mahamudu Bawumia, giving him full credit for some of the policy changes his party brought to the country.
One policy I'm very happy with is the digitalization policy. Now, this policy is about creating jobs online. making everything what accessible and taking it away from the traditional way of doing things to the modern way.
Despite some polls suggesting the results could sway one way or the other, some analysts say this year's election is expected to be highly competitive. Mariama Diallo, VOA News.
For more on how Ghanaians are preparing for the high-stakes election, we're joined by our very own Paul Ndiho, live via Skype from the streets of Accra. Paul, you are in one of the most stable African countries right now, but so far, what are your observations about this election?
I think stable is the key word. Everybody that you talk to here, they are kind of peaceful. They talk about how this election is going to be like no other. It's going to be very peaceful. You drive on the streets, you talk to people. There is no signs of violence. For example, yesterday we managed to attend some of the rallies. There was no security check. So that tells you how confident the system is, how confident the people in Ghana are about this election coming up tomorrow.
We've seen in so many African countries the youth demanding changes. What are the youths of Ghana asking for in this election?
That's a terrific question. The youth, it's all about jobs. And, of course, the economy has, in a way, tanked. It hasn't done very well for the young people. You have a lot of young graduates who are running the streets, who are trying everything humanly possible to put food on the table for their children. But it comes down to education. The current government has given young people a new lease on life, meaning that they've given them free primary education and free secondary school education. That's huge when you think about a country of about 18 million people, and half of that are young people. So this is an incredibly important decision that was made by the government to provide free education. So those are some of the things that are running around in the heads and minds of young people.
Paul, you know, for years, men have dominated the presidency in the continent of Africa and even elsewhere. Where are women in this election in Ghana? Do we have any top competitors? What's happening there?
Yes, there are some women on the top of the ticket. For example, NDC, one of the major political parties, the one that is going to be headed by former President John Mahama, has a vice presidential candidate on the ticket as a female vice president. So I've talked to some women who are also vying for office. They talk about how if, let's say, NDC wins, this would be a huge deal for women across the country, not just in Ghana, but across the region. So women are anxiously waiting to see the results of this election. But on the other hand as well, we have the current vice president who is running for president is a Muslim. When you talk to Muslims here, they say this could change the way people look at Islam in Ghana. For example, around Ghana, most of the countries there are Muslims. So they have a huge concentration of Muslims. So having an elected Muslim president in Ghana would be a great thing for this region.
Paul, great reporting as always. VOA's Paul Ndiho in Ghana to cover the presidential elections. The top two candidates in the Ghanaian elections, Vice President Mahamudu Bawumia with the ruling New Patriotic Party, or NPP, and former President John Mahama, who leads the opposition National Democratic Congress, the NDC, held their final rallies on Thursday. Paul Ndiho was at those rallies and filed this report from Accra, Ghana.
Political campaigns in Ghana officially concluded on Thursday, before the elections on Saturday. Both major political parties held final rallies in Accra. Key issues included the economy, free high school education, healthcare, unemployment, and corruption. For some young supporters of the NPP candidate Mahamudu Bawumia, education is paramount.
The best gift you can give me as a youth is education. Apart from education, I don't see whatever you can give me. I am a beneficiary of the free education senior high school. And you see, there is one policy that a lot of Ghanaians are not actually seeing. This is a long-term investment into the Ghanaian youth.
We are the Gen Zs. And the Gen Zs is all about digital. Digital world. We are moving forward. We are using AI. AI is about digital. So I endorse digital world because I believe Africa to be a third-rated continent, and we want to move to the top and be part of the Western world to be on the same level. So to make that happen, we have to support the MPP government to make that possible.
I'm the first batch of free education, and I know it has helped a lot of people, especially those who are in the villages, were able to even come to school because of free education. I know some certain people who couldn't have come if not free education. So I think their policy and their political party is really helping Ghana as a whole country.
Including inflation and criticizing Baumia, painting him as part of a failing system. NDC supporters of John Mahama, the former president, point to the country's economic problems.
You know, whenever we go to market, things that we bought it under His Excellency John Dramani Mahama for one city is now 15 cities. Things keep on escalating. And the dollar rate, a dollar per city, was very less under His Excellency John Dramani Mahama. Today, things are very high. A dollar is 17 cedis. And things are just, you know, miserable. Life is, you know, miserable for a common Ghanaian. And they want to impose someone who has mismanaged the economy. So that is why we Ghanaians are saying that, yes, enough is enough. 8 years of governance. You've not shown anything for us. So what we are saying is, just leave power, make sure you leave and live peacefully.
We've been in position for over 8 years with no improvement. The economy is very hard. Even with the youth, we don't have work to do. So we want our incoming president to come so that we get a work to do.
The economy is very bad. It's very, very, very bad. And I don't think this economy can help the generation. So we have to fight and remove them so that the best party as the NDC will come and take over and manage the economy better for us.
Both candidates are come from northern Ghana, a key NDC stronghold, making it a vital battleground.
Paul Liha, VOA News, at the final rally of the ruling party in Accra, Ghana.
U.S. senators on Capitol Hill will soon be weighing in on President-elect Donald Trump's cabinet picks, with many of the nominees facing questions about their beliefs and qualifications. The confirmation process could look different this time. U.S. congressional correspondent Catherine Gibson has more.
Make a hole, please.
The traditional process in the nation's capital. President-elect Donald Trump's nominees for key cabinet positions meeting with the U.S. senators who will decide if they should be confirmed.
Your 8 years and previous experience to being Attorney General of Florida for 8 years prepares you, I'm sure, well for this job.
Trump's pick to lead the U.S. State Department, Republican Senator Marco Rubio, is expected to be confirmed.
The president sets foreign policy. Our job at state will be to execute.
But Pete Hegseth, Trump's pick to lead the Pentagon, has never held a leadership position in the military. He was a host on the conservative Fox News network.
We're putting the warfighters first. That's what Donald Trump asked me to do. Your job is to bring a warfighting ethos back to the Pentagon.
Hegseth is one of several nominees with a history of controversial policy remarks that some Republican senators could have a hard time confirming.
Incoming President Trump needs to not just assume they're going to fall in line, because you might have some that on the even on the Republican side, if they are not given their due diligence or their due deference, they can make his life really tough.
The incoming Senate Majority Leader, Republican John Thune, pledged to swiftly hold votes on Trump's nominees.
We will do everything we can to process his noms quickly, get them installed in their positions so they can begin to implement his agenda.
But Trump has proposed installing appointees while the Senate is in recess, a sometimes controversial maneuver to bypass lawmakers' constitutional role of approving nominees.
What if the president tried to intentionally adjourn Congress using that power in order to make recess appointments? That's never happened. But when he says that he wants to make them, the only way he could possibly force that would be to force the adjournment of Congress. but that's going to wind up in the courts.
Republican senators are already pushing back.
Well, that's another whole issue. Obviously, I don't think we should be circumventing the Senate's responsibilities.
U.S. presidents of both parties have made recess appointments, but the Supreme Court limited that ability during the term of President Barack Obama. Catherine Gibson, VOA News, Washington.
We're going to circle back to Ghana for more analysis on Ghana's general elections. And I'm joined live via Skype from Accra by Rhoda Osei-Afol, a senior research analyst, Center for Democratic Development in Ghana. Rhoda, welcome to Africa 54. Tell us, what sets this general election apart from previous ones?
Well, thank you very much. Yes, looking at the 2024 elections, I think that the main distinguishing feature is the fact that we are having the two leading contenders from the main opposition party and the incumbent party coming from northern Ghana, one from the northeast and the other from the Savannah region. So this is quite interesting, and it's something that many are looking forward to in terms of how it shapes the outcomes, the overall outcomes of the elections. I guess the other thing, though, is also about the fact that both have been in government before, and so this is more about their record, their performance record as a party, as a government, and as individual leaders. So there's that opportunity for Ghanaians to sort of assess their performance. If you're looking at the former president, Mr. John Mahama, his performance whilst he was in office as president. And then in the case of the current vice president, who is the performance, he's been the chair of the economic management team. And so there's that opportunity for Ghanaians to sort of compare and contrast and see which among these candidates sort of serves them better based on their own records.
Well, Rhoda, what are these two contenders? What sets them apart in terms of their agendas? And what can you begin with former President Mahama, then talk about Bawumia? What are the critical issues they're promising to fix there in the country?
Quite interesting. Looking at their campaigns, there is quite some similarities in terms of the issues that they are focusing on. What sets them apart is how the kind of policies that they are trying to introduce to address some of the issues that they are focusing on, talking about the economy, talking about unemployment, job creation, talking about private sector development. Mr. Mahama, the former president, has been promising a 24-hour economy, by which he means that he wants to reach out to support the private sector so that they are able to play their role in supporting national development. And in that process, he's hoping to stabilize economic development. He's hoping to create jobs. The front runner for the ruling party, Vice President Bawumia, has also been looking at sustaining economic development, the gradual gains that have so far been made. And then education policy has been a major focus for this party. In the previous elections, they are hoping to sustain whatever policies that they introduced, especially in respect of free secondary education for Ghanaian children.
Is there one thing that Ghanaians kind of agree that this has to be fixed regardless of who comes to the State House?
Yes. I mean, if you look at the Afrobarometer survey, which has been tracking some of the issues of unemployment, has been a key issue for many Ghanaians. When the question was asked about their top three problems, unemployment came as number one. Infrastructure, if you're looking at health sector, the availability of health services. So for many people, this is a big issue. They are looking at roads, infrastructure, and these are issues that we expect will be shaping the outcomes of the group.
Rhoda, we're going to have to leave it there. Thank you so much for your analysis. Rhoda Osei-Afol is a senior research analyst, Center for Democratic Development in Ghana. We're excited to hear what you think about Africa 54 and all our VOA Africa programs on our website at voaafrica.com. Still to come, South African music producer, guitarist and composer Mongezi Ntaka joins Heather Maxwell to discuss jazz music. We'll be right back.
As we commemorate this year's Human Rights Day, we reflect on the 2024 international report from the NGO Equality Now that finds continued gaps in family laws in many African countries that fuel discrimination of women and girls. On the next episode of Our Voices, we discuss laws in areas ranging from marriage, inheritance, and more, and look for solutions to keep women and girls from a life of disadvantage and despair. Join the conversation each week right here on Our Voices.
You're watching VOA's Red Carpet. My name is Jackson Vunganyi. Thank you so much for joining us each week right here on Red Carpet. We bring you the latest in...
In other news, nearly 20 of the roughly 400 Kenyan police officers serving in Haiti on a UN-backed anti-gang force have submitted letters of resignation from the mission over the past 2 months. Three officers told Reuters it is because of pay delays and poor conditions. Officers have not received a response to their letters, and the three officers who did talk with Reuters say they continue to serve on the multinational security support mission. Hundreds of people rallied in N'Djamena Friday, supporting the Chadian government's call last week to scrap the military cooperation agreement with former colonial power France. Some 500 people carried placards and signs, with some reading, "Bar France," others saying, "Free Chad, France, leave." Polish immigrant Jansuz Wallus, the man convicted of killing South African Communist Party chief Chris Hani, is being deported to Poland Friday, according to the South African government. Wallus assassinated the anti-apartheid activist back in 1993 outside of his home in Boksburg. The now 71 years old was given the death penalty but was commuted to a life sentence in 2000 and granted parole 2 years ago. It's time for our entertainment report, and joining us now is Heather Maxwell, host of VOA's Music Time in Africa radio program, and she has a very special guest. Hello, Heather.
Hi, Esther. That is right. Hello, everyone. Canadian-based South African multi-award-winning singer Lorraine Claassen recently released a new EP entitled Polokwane, Quintessential African Story. She's known for carrying the torch of classic township music. Her mother was Tandi Claassen, a legendary African jazz singer of the 20th century. But this music on this EP is different. And the difference is in large part due to the man sitting right next to me, producer, guitarist, composer, Mongezi Ntaka. Hi, Mongezi.
Hi, how are you doing?
Good. How are you doing?
So far, so good.
Good. Welcome on the set. You look very handsome with your with your hat.
Yeah.
That's beautiful.
Yes.
So, usually, you've been on this set a few times with me and on my radio show, but usually we're talking about your music. You usually have the guitar and you play and sing, but this time it's different. What is your role in this new EP, Polokwane?
So I'm the producer, the arranger, the composer, but I'm also an artist on this recording together with Lorraine Claassen, because we have collaborated over the years as a producer and artist, but also sometimes we do as an artist, working together, the two of us.
Mm-hmm. How is Polokwane different than all of Lorraine's other albums? She's made several. She won a Juno Award in 2016 for one. How is this one different?
This is different because this is a focused on what you call information music. You know, you have entertainment music that entertains, but this is information music, meaning that it's going back to the African tradition where art is the foundation of all learning. So the information in the music is specifically for teaching the future generation, Polokwane, you know, as a history lesson. To those within South Africa that don't know anything about Polokwane, the makeup, its cultural diversity and all that, and then those outside the country as well.
That's beautiful. So let's take a few minutes to watch some of the title track, Polokwane, and then we'll come back on the other side.
Yes.
No words can express this
One day I'll call you home when my paydays are over.
Absolutely beautiful. Polokwane, as we can see from the video and people who know South Africa, is a place.
Yes.
And you went with her earlier this year to record this. Was that your idea to go to Polokwane?
Yes. So, you know, we recorded, the actual recording was done in Johannesburg.
Oh.
But the video was done in Polokwane. So the video, yes, was recorded, it was done, everything. So we spent like 3 days in Polokwane,
mm-hmm.
Because we wanted to have access to the musicians that we're familiar with, you know, the pianists, the drummer, and everybody. So we had to do that in Johannesburg. Then immediately after that, we left for Polokwane, mm-hmm. To meet the people. And it was Lorraine's first time in Polokwane. Because this was my idea that, no, we need to go to the rural parts of the country,
yeah.
Not just Johannesburg and Cape Town. Durban, those places are beautiful, but there's even more beauty in the people that are in Polokwane and other rural parts of Africa, including Polokwane.
Yeah. And how did you find it personally?
I had been there before.
Oh.
That's why I wrote the song.
Oh.
And so these are memories as a young, you know, musician when I was traveling with Lucky Dube in the 80s, late 80s. We played in Polokwane. In those days, they used to call it Petersburg. And then when Mandela came out, you know, things started to change. The names reverted to the original indigenous names. So the owners of the place, Bapedi people, they took the original name, Polokwane, which means a sanctuary, a place where people that are running from wars or they're seeking refugee peace,
mm-hmm.
they came to Polokwane over thousands of years.
Well, this is definitely an information album. This is just amazing. And actually, I've met with Lorraine, and I've met with Bokani
Dyer.
Dyer,
yeah,
in Johannesburg. They're both just incredible people, amazing musicians, as are you. Thank you so much for joining us, and we'll listen to your music more.
Yes, I'll, you know, just spread the word.
Thank you. All right, Esther, that's it for entertainment. Back to you.
Heather, that's wonderful. Thank you so much for bringing the guest here to the studio. Be sure to join Heather Maxwell's Entertainment Reports every Friday here on Africa 54. That's our show for today. We'll see you back here on Monday.